Hi, I'm Sookie.
And I'm Claire.
Welcome to Getting Psychic, where you can listen to us use ourselves to test the theory that anyone can get psychic. Hi, everyone. It's Sookie here. I'm doing my first semi-solo episode. This is an interview episode, which I'm super excited about, but Claire is on the road and she is getting ready to get hitched this month. So the show's going to go on without her just for this one interview, but I have my friend Vera Takakura here. Hey, Vera.
Hey, how's it going? Good to be here.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you.
So we're going to go deep about everything that Vera does. She is an ascension architect, wayshower, lightworker, and starseed. Her mission is to provide guidance to those on their ascension path and journey. Her work is conducted in the Akashic Records and energy field. She has the ability to travel across all spectrums of frequency and multidimensionally across our cosmos. In doing so, she assists you in creating new consciousness pathways by directly connecting them into your energy field. She not only provides Akashic readings, but actually takes you and your energy body on a journey to various etheric destinations of the Akashic realm. Her technical background combined with her light work has given her the ability to expand Akashic field energy and access information to provide attunements and activations for a leap forward in your spiritual path. If you're seeking something truly unique and different and to travel to places previously inaccessible and unreachable before, you are in the right place to experience co-creation of this alchemy of spiritual technology. So, Vera, we have to break down what all of that means.
Yeah, I know it's a mouthful, ain't it?
Okay, so because this podcast is called Getting Psychic, we like to try to go back to the beginning. So we have to figure out how you got from point A to that beautiful description of your work. I do have one question that I'll ask at first, because I know Claire at this moment would be interrupting me to ask you this, but do you believe that everyone can be psychic?
Absolutely. Without a doubt.
Say more.
Oh, well, no, just because my spiritual path and awakening didn't happen too much later in life. I didn't have the, what I'll call the luxury of having these types of insights, or I didn't have that awareness at a young age. Some people were experiencing, or at least that I know of, that are really, I guess you could say, more advanced in this, were all, I know several people that were receiving or getting signs or signals at an early age. I did not even have cognizance of this or consciousness of this until mid to late 40s.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's positive for our audience to hear. So what started happening? What led you to this place?
So basically, I'd say around 2018, I was looking for what we'll call sort of like these retreats. I started wanting to go to some kind of spiritual retreat, and I was Googling and was looking for a retreat in Hawaii, and just happened upon Oshun Retreats, which is held by a good friend of Jadea Lynch, which both of you and I know is a really, really powerful and well-known psychic now.
Yeah.
Because of the podcast with Patty and Jude, but they were having a retreat and I saw and got curious about it. I didn't know it was a spiritual or energy work type retreat. And I just decided to go to it because I was looking at the information on the website and was really attracted to the people that were going to be there. And I basically went on that retreat, and from that retreat kind of just really, that really opened my eyes to energy work and made me curious and motivated to try to learn as much as possible.
Yeah, that's amazing. Would you say that you just followed an instinct that brought you there?
You know, the funny thing is, I was reading the profiles of the people that were offering services, and in particular, Jude's really rung a bell with me. I don't know why. There was just something I was looking for and I felt it. And then when I went to the retreat, she was offering readings, and I think I scheduled with her, I booked with her like right before going to the Big Island, which is where it was in Kapa'a. I had a reading with her, and from that made me super curious to learn more. And I came back to the mainland looking for other intuitives to work with, and was disappointed actually that there weren't any that were as good as Jude as far as my first experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool. Okay. So what has unfolded between then and now?
So I was really hungry to learn more about intuitiveness and intuition. So I was basically just constantly trying to find, you know, taking courses, you know, self-taught or, you know, online, looking for other resources. And truth be told, there was a really, really expensive intuitive class that was available, but seemed really legit. And so I took that. It was like, I'm trying to remember if it was like a, was it a 3-month or a 4-month course? And it was online, but it was pretty neat in that you could learn about intuition and practice with a bunch of different other students, sort of like all over the world. And yeah. Actually, that's one of the ways I met one of my spiritual best friends or lightworker best friends or BFFs, and that's Mariana Belsunce. Mm-hmm. We only met once during a convention that they had here in Long Beach because everybody flew in. And so I met her. And then I guess you could say my network of light worker and energy worker people expanded from that. Along the way, somewhere there, I became curious about the Akashic Records. I don't know if it's because of my technical background, but I just, for some reason, the appeal of data and learning how to access that in the metaphysical sense became much, there was a huge drive for me to learn that as much as possible.
Yeah. So your day job is in tech, right?
Oh, yeah. My 3D life, well, so I live in Southern California, in Orange County, and but I'm actually originally from, I was born in San Francisco and raised in the Bay Area. So I call myself kind of like a Silicon Valley brat.
Totally.
Because most of my life I've been in front of a computer, even when I was really young. And so that was kind of like, I guess it kind of made sense that I've always been working in sort of like the information field. And so the draw to the Akashic Records probably made more sense for me more than any of the other modalities that are out there.
Yeah. How important do you think it is to have lightworker friends?
I think it's really critical because you, just like in any 3D field, you know, you learn the theory, but you need the practical and the, what we'll call on the job experience. And to some degree, that's what that lens is. Having those connections helps foster and develop your ability to work on that level. Because if you don't, it's just like anything. It's a muscle you have to exercise. I've met several people who are intuitive naturally, but because they don't invest the time to, I guess you could say, for lack of a better way of saying it, honing their craft or honing their abilities, they're not necessarily optimized to operate in that field, which is kind of interesting to see. Because like I said, you could be naturally good at something, but if you don't develop it, it never really progresses either. You know, so
surrounding yourself with the right energies or energies that are aligned with where you're trying to go is super important.
Correct. And how you're trying to grow, because I'll be honest, I would never have gotten to the point I'm at if it wasn't for the people that I connected with, like Jude and Patty. And then, you know, I mentioned Mariana, and then later down the line, other people like Jeffrey St. Rose. These were all critical people that along the way I attribute most of my growth. I totally attribute that to those people.
Yeah. And now look, you are helping a bunch of people grow. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's ironic, but ideally, you know, you try to get to a point where hopefully you can give back. It's just sometimes I think in the 3D world, we don't think like that necessarily, right? Because we're always trying to do things to either better our position in life, whether financially or professionally, et cetera. But this is definitely a service to others type motivation, I guess is what I'll say.
Totally. Yeah. Okay. So let's break this down. What's an ascension architect?
Oh, that's funny. That's a term I coined just because of my technical connection or background. I feel like it's a role that helps others find their way in their ascension path. And the architecture part comes from a lot of what I know as a technical person, in that my day job is I'm an IT advisor and I work for a managed service provider. So that's IT outsource. And we're usually trying to solve for problems, you know, or challenges for businesses, for them to move forward and optimize their environment, or, you know, find efficiencies. And so there is a role, or there are many roles that are based on solutions architects or cloud architects. And these are people that basically make sure that they configure or find ways to, like I said, optimize an environment so that you have stability or good information flow. So the architecture role, I felt, was the right right size title for this, is because I like to think I help others on their path, their ascension path, and look for efficiencies, try to solve for challenges, very much in the similar same way.
Yeah. Well, you do. I'm going to talk later about my experience working with you, but I told you before we talked that I was really going to dig down to brass tacks so that our listeners really felt like they had a full understanding. So I'm going to ask, in your words, what is ascension?
That's a good question. That's a really good question. I find that it can be a lot of different things to a lot of different people. For me personally, it was the ability to see and look for things beyond what we see in our reality, as sort of like I'll call it the rat race, or just the daily grind of being human, and seeing things or perceiving things that existed beyond that and accessing that. And I don't know if that means, I know it's such a overused term as far as enlightenment, but just feeling the need to be able to assist in a way beyond what we do on this physical level, and having an awareness of things that exist beyond what we just normally see or hear or feel. And so I'm not sure if that elevated sense comes from, you know, what we'll call spirituality, or just an understanding that a truth exists beyond what we think is, you know, like I said, the standard or the norm. So I'm not 100% sure if my explanation's that's providing more clarity.
Perfect. Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah, no, I think that that's amazing. I think that when we surround ourselves with light workers and people who see themselves as on that path, we take for granted certain terminology. So it's nice to, even as a self-reflection, try to dissect how we look at it.
Oh no, absolutely. Because I have a left brain, logical, analytical mind. And honestly, with ascension, I feel like there's a level of trust you have to give to be able to start to even work towards it, right? Because you have to quiet your logical mind and say, okay, I'm trusting that this feels right. And it's much more about feeling whether something aligns versus, I guess, having a sensitivity to understanding whether you're in alignment with something versus misaligned. And a lot of that has to do with letting go of the logic.
Yeah.
Which is really antithetic, or the antithesis to how the world runs right now with all the technology and the AI and things that are going on out there.
Yeah, well put. Because really everything that we do on this plane is all about taking action.
Correct.
And it's almost like the work there is letting things in or releasing, which is pretty freaking hard when you are trained in this reality.
Yeah, no, when this is the norm that you see, when you're conditioned.
Yeah. Okay, so what's a light worker?
Well, to me, a light worker is someone or an individual or a group of people that are working towards raising the frequency and the vibration of the environment that they're in, and being a beacon and a light for others that may not be able to see things beyond their you know, present day problems or issues, because they're stuck in a loop around either a problem or an emotion or a situation. So I don't know if we can consider light workers as those people who are able to take other people out of their ruts or their issues or their challenges. So I kind of look at it as someone who's, you know, I mean, literally bringing light into a situation where maybe it's dark, a dark experience for people or individuals.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, based on that, do you think one can be a light worker and not be aware of it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I guess, you know, sometimes you know people who you just like being around because they come into the room and the energy, you know, just all of a sudden lightens up or pulls up, or you just feel better, I mean, automatically. So to me, that's indicative of someone who's a light worker without knowing it, because they may not necessarily, you know, vocalize that or express that formally, but they just have that aura or that ability to bring everybody up.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, please note, you can be a light worker without having an energy healing job.
Yeah, no, you don't have to have formal training, like all the certifications and all that good stuff. Yes, that can happen, where someone just seems to just naturally be able to have that gift or ability of raising frequency.
It's a beautiful thing. Okay, starseed.
What is a starseed? Well, a starseed by definition is someone who recognizes that they're the offspring or the result of galactic heritage or galactic ancestry. The odd thing is that, you know, the more you dive into it, you start to realize that everybody's really a starseed at one point or another. And so we're all hybrids. We're all very, very mixed hybrids. And so there's a lot of starseeds out there that may or may not be aware of that designation or background. So,
yeah. When you first started learning about starseeds and galactic beings, were you drawn to it?
So just taking a few steps back into when I started my Akashic path or studies or research, the first time when I started feeling like I wanted to learn the Akashic records, I actually booked with three different types of Akashic readers. One was shamanic, one was a sound healing Akashic reader, and one type of reading was there were two people who were Akashic readers that read you at the same time. So because I wanted to just experience the whole range of Akashic records. I felt like, okay, so what does it mean? How do you define that? And so I went through this range and realized that Akashic reading or the Akashic records could be accessed multiple ways. It wasn't just one specific way, even though a lot of people think of it as just, hey, someone reads your information and they access it and they just give that to you.
Yeah, that was a really enlightening understanding for me. And I think maybe you helped me come to this understanding. But for a little bit there, I just thought the Akashic Records was a place that you could learn how to have access to, and you just learned about your past lives.
That is the traditional way it's taught. Basically, it's a library. Just going back to your question about being a starseed or how I knew or how that came about. Basically, I was working in that intuitive group that I was telling you about, and there was someone who said, hey, you need to get in a galactic Akashic reading. So I'm like, okay, what is this galactic Akashic reading? I didn't really know what it was. And so I basically signed up for it. And this is Devi Solaris. She's really well known for this because, yeah, she was still accessible at that time because she doesn't do readings anymore. She has courses, et cetera. But I got a reading with her and my mind was blown. My reading was like a Star Trek movie or a Star Wars movie. She just told me all of these different lives of being Andromedan and Sirian and, I mean, Pleiadian. And I was just like, whoa. And the funny thing is, even as it was a fantastical like session of the information, but a lot of it resonated. It explained a lot for me. And I was like, oh gosh, that explains why at 14 I wanted to work for NASA and build space stations. It explained to me why I was always looking at Orion's belt as a child. I was like, oh gosh,
all these, you're trying to home.
Yeah, everything came together and I was like, okay, so this is real. I mean, it may sound crazy, but it feels real. And so that also, that also just, you know, kind of pivoted me into that path. And I was like, oh shoot. Okay. So there's this whole thing about Akashic records and star seeds and, you know, light workers, and that whole thing just started to kind of mesh. So that's kind of the, once I understood that, then I started to look, try to seek for more information, just trying to learn as much as possible for myself.
Yeah. I mean, you seem to know a lot about different galactic beings. And also I wanted to kind of get clear on terminology, because sometimes we use the word ET or extraterrestrial. Can you speak a little bit more about the terminology surrounding non-human life? If I'm calling something an ET, but it actually lives like in a different dimension, but like on Earth or something like that, you know, like.
Okay, gotcha. I kind of call them a cohabitant because they exist. They exist with us, but we just can't see or sense them. They're just dimensionally phase shifted from us, meaning they're just, the frequencies kind of just on us. It's on a different spectrum that we're just not sensing because of our 3D reality, but they're around us. And I sense energies. That was the thing that developed with me, was as I started to meditate and ask, and it's always, that's the thing. It's like, sometimes you just need to ask for signals, you ask for signs. And the funny thing is you will get an answer. So that was, I started to actually see and sense energies or get energy signals in my body. And that's why I know they exist, is because I can sometimes sense them present, even though we don't see them in our, with our physical, the way that we're used to seeing physical things. So so we can still sense them either energetically, some level of visibility. Obviously, probably the biggest example of that is anybody who's clairvoyant, like when Judea Lynch describes them with clarity, that's how you kind of know. She kind of validates a lot of that for us.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so go back to when these abilities or this access started unfolding for you. You're in meditation, and what are you asking?
Oh, I would always ask to raise my vibration to the highest frequency accessible. And then I'd say, you know, can I please be given a sign, you know, by my guides or my guardians, you know, that are around me. And one day in meditation, I kid you not, I was sitting up meditating and it felt like someone came behind me and unplugged a cable and then,
oh my God,
plugged something in. And it's very freaky to feel like something's physically happening to you. And their first thought is this evil? Because you know, our default process as a human is, because we've been conditioned by religion, is that anything that happens outside of the ordinary of our 3D reality has to be bad.
A demon.
But
yeah,
I sat there with it and I said, okay, that's interesting. Just observed and kind of just, you know, tried to not freak out. But then of course, my first thing to do was to check with all my lightworker friends in session with Jude and several other people. I was like, hey, this happened to me. Can you look into that? And I intuitively felt it was nothing bad. I had confirmation or validation that I was upgraded. So I was like, okay, cool. And so, obviously in discussing this with people that I'd worked with before, like Jude, she was like, let me see if that's an attachment or something. And she's like, no, it's actually like, you got like this weird, like channel to a higher dimensional power source. So you're good. So I was like, okay, cool. Like thumbs up. I like that.
That's like, that's like talking to your friend who's like a nurse. Like, can you look at this for me?
Look at this bruise or what this mole looks like. And they're like, no, it's all good. So it was nice.
It's like, an energetic mole check. Yeah. So kind of her.
That's who my, I always call her my spiritual report card, because throughout my ascension path or lightworker development or evolution, she's someone I've always checked with on a regular basis to see where I'm at. And she's always validated me in so many ways.
That's awesome. That's so awesome to have that support. And interestingly enough, in some ways, you have been that for me. So,
oh, I appreciate that.
It's cool that you get to now share that too.
Yeah.
Because I think we all start to, you know, we all need to rely on each other, and it's awesome.
Exactly. No, I agree. And that's what I mean by, I think when everyone's on the same, kind of like the saying of everyone's on the same frequency, it's there's a certain level of validation that starts to happen by virtue of who the company you keep. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now I find myself doing what we'll call collaborative sessions. I kind of coined the term co-session, and it's actually the realization as I started to work in the Akashic Records that it's an actual field, that it's not just about retrieving specific information. It's actually being able to work in that energy. And basically what I've discovered for myself is that I've been able to take other people up there and give visibility to areas where people haven't been able to access before. And I seem to work really, really well with highly intuitive or more advanced level people or light workers. So it's been an interesting journey in that most of my sessions with Jude were all kind of like this one-on-one, she's reading for me. But eventually, as I got more and more curious, because she would see things in my field every time I talked to her, she'd be like, hey, I see you're doing this, I see you're doing that. Eventually it turned into a, hey, Jude, do you mind if I open the Akashic Records or the Akashic Energies and see what you see? Because I said, it's always fascinating to me that you see everything in my field. I'm just curious what would happen if we did that. And so I took her in. She basically kind of said, yeah, whatever. I didn't really even take it seriously. And then I took her in that one time, and she couldn't stop channeling this, what I'll call more collective information that was beyond just my individual reading with her. And at the end of it, she was kind of like, holy shit, what just happened there? And so that was,
you took me somewhere.
It was really cool. And I was shocked and surprised. And I was like, oh, that's pretty neat. And so I thought it was something that was just more like something everybody else could do. I said to Jude, you're so advanced. You're so way ahead of so many people. And you hold such a high frequency. I said, here, this is what I do. Just go ahead and try it for yourself. And so I just assumed that was something that she would be able to access. And then through subsequent conversations with her, I found out, she said, you know what, I've actually tried a couple of times to go up the way that you do, or to travel the way you do, or to journey the way you do. And she goes, I'm not able to do it. It's, you're doing something different. And I, you know, it's somehow your intention, some how you work with it is doing it. It's not something I'm able to. So it made me curious to go and say, huh, let me try this with a couple other people. And that's when I started to realize that it was something different and unique to me for whatever reason. And so I started sitting there going, how am I accessing the energies differently than everyone else? What the hell's going on? And then, you know, here's a weird thing that I'll say. I got the awareness that I'd actually had a lifetime as an Akashic Record keeper. And I know that sounds really strange, but I got that awareness and I checked in with a couple of other lightworker friends, and they were like, huh, you do actually seem to have had one lifetime that was a record. So it just kind of made sense, because I was like, why am I accessing it differently? How can I access it differently? I thought everybody, it was a standard the way it was done, but that really led to the awareness that there is definitely a different way to access the records. I'm not saying that I'm any more special or better than anyone, but that was just an awareness that I achieved simply because of the amount of work I was doing with it. So,
yeah, there's two concepts there that I love so much. One is being able to open your field and essentially intermingle gifts, because clearly she couldn't have done it without you, and you couldn't have had that confirmation without her. And that is really cool. I love the idea of experimenting with that.
Oh yeah, and I think the key thing here is the collaborative frequency, what I'll call interaction, I guess, because like you said, it's like she wouldn't have been able to get that visibility without me, you know, sort of introducing it. But at the same time, I need her eyes and her hypersensitivity to everything to validate where I'm taking her. You know, it's like we need each other. It's like I do the journey. I bring the journey to her, but at the same time, she has to bring the information. She has to channel that too. So that's why I started calling them co-sessions, because they're collaborative. There's a teaming and a partnering of the energies. It's now if anything, it's an even energy exchange, and it's almost like an amplification of those frequencies through the process of us working together. Really, so that's why it was so really cool. And then it led me to start asking other people, hey, you know, can I do this with other people? And that's where I started to get more and more validation that there was something here that felt like a next level way of channeling and getting this intuitive information versus just relying on one person's filter or single perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. And the second thing was that it's pointless to compare your abilities other people. And I think we should all always be reminding each other
you,
of that.
You have your unique abilities. You know, when you look at a modality like the Akashic Records, it's a framework. And honestly, for a while, I thought I was failing because I learned the traditional way, which is usually the traditional way or the way it's taught is you say a what they call a portal prayer, which is, you know, you request the access verbally and you gain access to the library. I was going into the records and getting different snippets of visuals, and it was frustrating because I wasn't getting the information channeled to me the way that I normally learned about it. And I was sitting there questioning what was wrong with me. I was getting frequencies, visions of light. What I mean by frequencies, I would actually get like feelings and sensations in my body of energy. And I was like, what the heck's wrong with me? Why is this like this? How come I can't just go in and ask a straight question and get a straight answer? And then finally one day in frustration, I said, okay, fine. If this is the way it's going to be, this is how it's going to come through, then I'm just going to have to accept it. I accept it. Okay, fine. And then from then on, that's when it kind of started to blow up on its own, because then I started going, okay, well, how can I use what I'm getting and try to understand it better? And it of course it develops because you start working with a bunch of different other people to kind of start understanding, getting more clarity on what it is you're experiencing and feeling and the results that you're getting from it. But it's like the whole experimentation idea is important because you won't know until you try. You won't understand until you put it through, you know, through a certain situation and experiment and see where that leads. So that's really, really key in getting psychic.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people faced with that would have given up, but because they were comparing themselves to other people.
Yeah, I think it's because I got to practice with so many people that it's funny because it's almost like I was given this whole range of, in some cases with some people, I'd get information, terrestrial past life information. In some people, I would get galactic information. In my own personal readings, I got a stream of information about my galactic background. And again, the validation will always come from I'd work with someone else. Like I got a reading with Debbie Solaris. And when I told her I got all this different information about myself galactically, she was like, "All, wow, you're getting a lot of information. Are you going to become a galactic Akashic reader now?" And I go, and it never even crossed my mind to even go that route. I just said, no, I'm just always seeking truth for myself. I just want to learn more and more about my truth. And so for me, whatever that took for myself is what I pursued. It had nothing to do with what I'll call a means to an end of saying, okay, I'm going to become this big reader now and make a ton of money and stuff. No, it was always just in pursuit of, you know, accessing the truth for myself, whatever that was.
Yet here you are, a galactic Akashic reader.
Well, now it's okay. So I mean, of course, you know, we all have our own comfort zone of things. And so I live in the technical very comfortably. And so in my 3D life, you know, being an IT advisor, being a solutions architect, that's like my default. And so I've always felt really comfortable in that place. But as I've worked more in the energy space and seen, you know, how it can, you know, either affect or help people, that's when I started to get that pull and the understanding that I could actually bridge the two, which is the interesting thing, is that I can use my technical background and experience and apply it in the spiritual world and vice versa. It's actually, you know, we all think that the left brain logical can't coexist with the right brain creative, but there's actually a synergy there if we allow it and don't, you know, I guess you could say don't resist it and fight it and assume that they can't coexist, because I find that spirituality and technology are very similar in that they're both in the background. And when everything's going great, no one notices it until something goes wrong.
Oh my God, I love
so,
that.
So basically, you know, that's the funny thing about it, is that they actually coexist much more than everyone realizes, and that technical concepts are just as valid in the spiritual energy work as the spiritual and the energy work can work in the technology aspect.
Yeah, that's a very cool observation. So let's talk a little bit about what your readings are actually like, what the experience is like. And I've been lucky enough to take part in, do we even call it a reading? I mean, it's like an experience.
That's the thing. I really think it's a misnomer or misperception to call it a reading, because that lends itself to looking at it as a one-way communication, when actually it's bi-directional.
Yeah, totally.
And it can't happen unless it's bi-directional, because what I find on my side is, or generally traditionally in the Akashic Records readings, people will say, hey, I have specific questions about XYZ, like my job or my relationship, etc. What I find, what I'll call in these Akashic sessions is more what I call it. It's more working with someone's energy and asking for more of an intention than an answer. And it's like we're both active participants in this, because I open the energetic field, and really what comes through we can never predict, because we only ask for whatever is the highest and best intended for that person to experience or hear or understand or gain awareness from. And more often than not, it's a connection or a reconnection to healing or energies or frequencies. And I guess I've kind of coined the term direct connecting, because it has nothing to do about going through the human mind's filter of interpretation. It's more like a sensing and a knowing and a receiving directly versus me interpreting things. And sometimes the awareness comes directly to the person I'm working with, where if they're clairaudient, they'll hear the message. If they're clairvoyant, they'll see what's coming forth. I can see and hear and feel too, but I almost feel like I'm just there kind of holding, like creating the connection and ushering it and supporting it while that person's directly dialed in, let's call it, to the energy.
Well, so for a good example, then let's talk about the session that we did as an experiment with our mutual friend, Tamara. Mm-hmm. She is, I don't know, she probably has all the clairs, right?
She hears and sees. She's like, I kind of affectionately call her my bloodhound, because when we go into the Akashic field, she's instantly like a pointer, just like on it. And I've never seen anybody that, the only person not trying to say that we compare light workers to light workers, but I mean, dude, to me, it's kind of that kind of clairvoyant, where it's like instant. They see everything with a clarity that I can't even, but I wish I had, but that's not my forte. So I ain't even going to go there. But yeah.
Well, not yet anyway.
No, but I mean, but I've honed my skills, or I guess I've naturally developed one way and I've trusted that. So I don't fight it and say, well, why am I not like Jude, or why am I not like Tamara? But again, to your point, as far as the co-session we did all together, yeah, that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it was cool. So you basically open the field, and your methodology is, I can't assume. You say a lot of things. Yeah. And you're like, okay, it's open. Do you?
I definitely feel like that was a meditation, or we can call it a meditation, a guided meditation, that I have been so shocked that sometimes, you know, I didn't even think the words I was saying would create an effect or cause anything to happen.
So you're saying that you received messaging about surrounding the words that you use?
Yeah. No, I mean, you know what? The ironic thing is I originally came up with that guided, I guess you could say, vocalization of that process because it was a reminder for me mentally of going through the chakra systems. Because basically the guided journey really takes you through a process of connecting you, going through your chakra system down to the core of the planet, back up through the chakra system to source, and then ultimately bringing you back down to your heart center, which is where everyone connects.
Yeah.
And then expanding that field through your heart center with everyone that's connected in the session. It seems simple, but it's actually been really consistent as far as how I've learned with other methodologies, as far as how they connect, whether mentally or, you know, just through meditation. So my vocalization of that, I guess, somehow created, for lack of a better word, you know, a consistent access script, kind of like access code. And if anything, because of my tech mind, it's like, oh, here's the username and password for you to gain access to this information store, which, to be honest with you, I see the Akashic Records and the Akashic Field as light. It's like a light database. I don't see it as a library. It's just kind of like, you know, hey, we're Googling for things, you know, kind of things.
It's awesome. All right. Well, regardless of what you say, it works. So we go in and instantly Tamara's seeing stuff, and she's seeing beings, and she's getting information. And I mean, I'm not seeing anything. I don't think you're necessarily seeing stuff either, but you're feeling the energies.
I feel, it's more of a feeling of the energies. And also it's funny because I have sensitivity to light and frequency. So if like there's bright light or changes of color, I will perceive that, because that's when I'll check in with Tamara and say, hey, does this look like this? Or is that what we're getting? And she'll say, yeah, it's exactly that. So that's the cool part of that, is we're both almost like tag teaming in this session, where we're checking in with each other in a roundabout way. And that's actually really cool, because then I'll say something and she'll be like, no, that's right. That, so it validates her. But then at the same time, she validates me. It's like I said, it's very, very much a team, a partnering effort.
There were points where she was like, I can't remember how she put it, but she was like, we're at Sookie's home planet.
Yeah, she said, so basically, we've been brought to her home planet, and she goes, they're saying welcome home. And it was kind of throwing me off.
I was like, it's Arcturus. And she was like, well, it starts with an A.
Oh, that's right. That's absolutely right. Yeah.
And you're like shooting out, like, you're like,
I think I said Antares or Altair. Those are other A based.
Yeah. And I'm like, I've never even heard those. But I was like, it's Arcturus. And she's like, is it? Oh, yeah, it is. And you're prompting her. It's like she's doing the communicating, but you're pushing her to ask deeper questions. Yeah. And it was crazy.
Well, yeah, because I felt like we were trying to do a form of healing for you that was only accessible when we went up there, and wasn't, but she was kind of like, you know, guiding us. Again, she was our eyes, right? She was the person who was validating that. But then I was also the one who was prompting for, can we ask this? Can we ask that? Are they this? Are they that? So it's kind of like, again, it's a teaming effort. It's funny because when I think about it, it's like, there's no way individually we'd be like if we try to do it ourselves, it's going to take a lot longer and maybe we won't even get there. But this is no different from in the 3D world, when you're trying to complete a project or get something, a mission accomplished, you identify the people who are critical to completing the task. It's like a mission, right? So It's like we get to be X-Men in a weird way, right? It's like, oh, so-and-so has this specialty and gift, and so-and-so has this, you know, like, you know, in the technical field, someone's really good at databases, someone's good at network engineering, someone's good at coding. It's like you put together this kind of like highly specialized team, and in a weird way, that's kind of what we're doing here is putting together like the A team for light work, I guess. Kind of an odd thing, but yeah.
It is very, very cool. You two working together has brought up some really beautiful stuff. It's so cool to watch unfold. So it's been awesome.
And so again, and on that train of thought, yeah, I mean, I want to do one with other people. As a result, we did tap into Vinnie Tolman too, who agreed to do a co-session between me and Tamara, and that was really good. And hopefully I'm able to share that soon, because these sessions are not based on individual readings. This is information that we're channeling for the collective. And that's another thing that I really want to try and foster and hopefully grow with other light workers.
Yeah, that's beautiful. That is so cool. It's more than just digging into an individual's personal information. You are
trying to help everyone.
Yeah, you're opening up a door to get information to help humanity. High five on that, Vera.
We try.
You're a very humble light worker, my friend.
No, thank you.
So, all right, we have to talk about sacred geometry.
Oh boy.
Yeah. What would an interview with Vera be if we didn't address this? I want to talk about the importance of sacred geometry in your work. How did you come to understand that it was an important tool? And how do you utilize it in your daily life and practice?
So initially, I got attracted to sacred geometry because obviously the designs are interesting, right? And I was really attracted originally to the Sri Yantra, which is a sacred geometry of intersecting triangles. Really, I think it's 9 of them that are counter-opposing. It's an expression of the divine feminine and the sacred masculine and the balance between those two. But sacred geometry initially was just an interest visually, right? I think a lot of people, you know, like to look at things like the flower of life or the Merkaba or any of those things. But it happened in meditation that I was always doing this specific chakra balancing meditation. And the thought came to me about using or pulling sacred geometry into my energy work, because one of the best ways to train your third eye or your mind's eye is to look at something with your physical eyes and then close your eyes and try to recreate that in your mind's eye. So initially I was doing that with that particular design. And again, just because of my regular readings with Jude, she was like, huh, when I get up to your third eye and crown, I can see these shapes around you. I can see the Sri Yantra. I can see, you know, whatever you're bringing into your energy field. And so that led to me being curious and going, I wonder if I can expand that and place that in different chakras. I wonder if I can take that and expand that around my energy field. And so I kind of started doing that part naturally and realizing that that also shifts and exercises your energy field. Because we don't intentionally sit there and go, how do I strengthen my energy field? How do I work with it? And so it was through that realization that I started doing that and feeling like, oh, wow, this is something you can actually use. It's not just something nice and pretty to look at. It's actually something you can bring into energy work. And then, of course, as I worked with it, I was really starting to just intuitively understand that these are actually constructs for us to use as a foundation of work. And that generally, once you start doing that, you're kind of making this energetic, how do I say, house for yourself that creates a strengthening of the field, a protection of the field, because these designs are mathematically, you know, created or universally understood to the point where sacred geometry we see in the dimensional field also is accessible through all the other dimensions, because they don't warp or change. They're like these really stable designs that do have different functions and different things. And so that was a real kind of like my own self-realization with that. And then most recently, I discovered that there's this whole body of knowledge around sacred geometry as I started to dive deeper into it that actually speaks to this type of work, and basically just was like an aha moment for me of there's actually a lot of theory behind this that supports it that I guess a lot of people had never tapped into until I'd say more recent years.
Do you have advice for someone who's completely new to the use of sacred geometry or simple ways to apply it?
I would really advise someone to, if they can explore, I mean, there's, I know everyone is aware of the channel Gaia, and there's a PhD, Robert Gilbert, who's spent the last 30 years working with sacred geometry, and he's compiled this great series, Sacred Geometry Science, that was an eye-opener for me, because once I started watching it, I was like, oh my gosh, all this information, or a lot of the things that he was doing was something very similar to what I was doing. And I was really, really shocked and surprised that there was an actual practice around this or an actual body of knowledge around this. I really encourage everyone to watch that particular series, because after each episode, there's a practice episode or session with it to where you can actually incorporate using the concept around whatever he's teaching, whether it's the platonic solids or the Merkaba and things like that. But really, it's not that difficult to bring sacred geometry into your what I'll call your regular energetic practice. It's just really accessing the design. And like I said, you know, something as simple as just bringing it into your mind's eye and reinforcing that with meditation every day, even if it's a short one. Using it is really just up to you how you want to use that, because you, again, experimentation is key, and you can place it in your chakras, you know, in your energy body, above your head, below you, I mean, anywhere, and kind of see how that affects you and how you work with it. It's just another tool. It's a visual tool.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll link that Gaia Network video.
Yeah, that's a really, I think that was like the primer of them all at this point, because when I started talking about sacred geometry, for a while I thought I was a little crazy, because I kind of kept feeling that repetitive reinforcement, and I was talking to other people about it, but then I started hearing that other people are experiencing receiving codes, seeing the geometry. So that was validation for me that it's not just, you know, a singular phenomenon with one person. It's actually across the board. I think there's a heightened awareness for it now.
Yeah. Okay. So when people are experiencing what you call codes in meditation, what's happening there? What are they seeing?
Basically, probably what I'll say is, and I'll use a terminology from the Robert Gilbert PhD guy, because there's what he calls packed thought forms that are always floating around us, which are all what we'll call, in my tech terms, energy packets. And there's information in those energy packets. And I believe that we're always being streamed or communicated to by several different influences. And that can be go both ways, meaning good or bad. But we just don't recognize it as human beings, because we haven't honed or developed our sensitivity to receive that. Because just like in technology, unless the transmitter and the receiver are aligned, a lot of the data that gets transmitted will just kind of like not get noticed or get dropped. Let's put it that way. The data gets dropped. But as we're starting to elevate our frequency and actually be able to become better antennas or receivers, we're now getting the awareness and the sensitivity to receive these packed thought forms or these energy packets. And that comes through light codes. And that comes through people suddenly saying, hey, I'm seeing all these symbols. They're not legible or intelligible to us as humans, but they're obviously some level of communication that's being transmitted that we're just getting awareness to now. And then of course, as certain people come online, I guess is what I'll call it, or systems that come online, they become much more aware of how to translate, you know, those pack thought forms or those energy packets. And a lot of times, to be honest with you, we receive downloads all the time that we're not necessarily meant to decode at the moment, but we're being prepared and kind of like, we're kind of like these energy stores where we're just getting the information continuously. And that will also decode when time comes.
Intriguing. It's so cool.
You know, it's like, we're always getting messages. It's just a matter of whether we're ready to decode them or not. And that a lot of that's going on right now.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, a lot of people really think that this is a time of rapid change and development for humanity in that department. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, absolutely. The frequency of the planet is changing. I think it's becoming obvious because of all the different, what we'll call polarities, you know, the extremes of seeing all these great innovations and advancements, but at the same time, seeing on the other end, a lot of destruction and chaos and climate change, et cetera. So that's the rapid change of the planet that we're seeing, I think. But also the awareness of, you know, I guess you could say humanity, as far as the awareness of how those changes are all affecting us. But because of this heightened awareness, that also exposes, you know, light and dark need to coexist. So there's kind of like, I think, the constant conflict that's happening between those two polarities that are eventually going to produce, you know, a result depending on where someone aligns. So where they are in alignment with those frequencies.
Yeah. Okay. When, in your opinion, will the existence of extraterrestrial life be exposed to the world population in an open manner?
You know, there's a lot of speculation on that. I don't even want to, you know, be a person to even say I have any intuitive aspects to that. I just know that,
yeah,
with my own personal experiences and what seems like more awakening or awareness with other people, it's pretty darn close. I mean, I can't even, you know, timeline-wise, I can't even say, but with all the stuff in the news and with all the information in the news and all the shows about, you know, ancient aliens, et cetera, there's just more and more information being fed to the general public. That's almost like a, hey, let's get them used to this idea so that once it does become disclosed or revealed, no one's going to really be surprised anymore. I just feel like there's enough of the language in the everyday, you know, sort of social media and news feeds that we're all getting used to it anyway. And I'm getting signals right now that, yeah, that's all that's going on right now. We're just being told so that we get used to it. We become accustomed to it so that when that does get exposed, it'll be much more generally accepted.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you want to talk about? That's my very poignant interview approach. What do you think is important right now?
Oh, for us, as far as an awakening group or awakening population, probably that we affect more than we realize, and that a lot of our ascension work is going to be based on working with each other and helping each other strengthen the frequencies between us, because you can't allow any higher path or higher energetic frequencies to come into your field unless you elevate yourself to receive that. And individually, we're all doing that work, but it's in this collaborative way that I'm finding that we receive or we signal or in the highest possible way with each other. And it's the realization that this work isn't all, I mean, initially the work starts with yourself and getting clear and, you know, kind of getting to a point of awareness for yourself. But the more work you do, you start to realize that your energy needs to connect beyond yourself. And it's finding the others that are in that, you know, at that level where it's no longer a service to yourself, it's a service to others, and it's a giving without expectation of receiving anything. Because once we reach that level or that stage of evolution, there is no more material gain. There is no more, you know, sort of this selfish promotion of trying to achieve individual goals. It becomes everything I do affects you, because we're all supposed to be one and we're moving towards that path. So there's no separation anymore. And I know it sounds kind of crazy, but that's how we start to evolve spiritually. And it's in that interconnectedness that we're going to evolve. That's where we're going to evolve as a species, into that next level of awareness.
Sounds great to me.
I know.
Sign me up. It's funny, because a lot of times on this podcast, I laugh about the fact that, sort of in an attempt to meet our higher selves, we are drudged through the muck of this existence.
I understand.
It's like, oh, cool. We just spent like 7 weeks exploring our energy centers, and in the process was just like, shit, I gotta look at all this stuff.
Yeah.
But on the other side is, because that all ultimately seems very inward looking and having to do with self-speculation. But on the other side of that is also this awareness of this oneness and lack of self that you describe. That is a cool place to be.
I mean, the thing is, we all came here for Earth School, apparently, if we don't know that by now, to learn and move through our lessons, our life lessons. And I think it's in that awareness that we start to have the understanding and almost acceptance of, hey, you know, this drudgery or this muck was there for a reason, and it was for us to learn and see the contrast of the light and the dark. And if you can get yourself to a place of understanding that, then all those things don't seem as bad anymore. You know, it's almost like you can shake it off, because you know that it was there to help you learn and grow. And so once that awareness is achieved, then it's not as bad. But I have to say, when you're in the middle of it, I don't dismiss the fact that it's tough. I mean, if you don't have awareness yet that this is something you need to kind of figure out how to get through, you're going to think you're being punished. So I don't take it lightly either. I never sit there and go, well, you know, now that I've achieved this awareness, all of a sudden I'm immune to all those things. No, we're still human. You'll still cut your finger. You'll still stub your toe. You know, you'll still have bills and whatnot. But ideally, hopefully, it's the understanding that we're working towards something that's going to eventually move away or move through it and get past it. And I think that's the patience and the resilience that you need to hone and develop. And that goes, you know, that lends itself to the spiritual work and the energy work that you do, that you maintain as a maintenance for yourself daily. I mean, because that's what's going to keep you sane at this point with all the stuff going on. I don't see how else to do it. I don't see how else to do it.
Yeah, no shit.
No.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
Well, gosh, hopefully that was, I mean, that's a lot of downloads, that's a lot of information we've streamed there.
Yeah, we covered a lot in a tight hour. So I feel like it's a good point to wind down. Yeah, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I what I'll say then is, you know, I know you were curious about sort of like, hey, what does that process look like in connecting into the Akashic field and journeying with the people that I work with. You know, maybe we can try and do something like that in the future. I don't know if that's something that's you know, like we can actually, you know, try to have a session where we go in and try to get some information for the collective and see what channels through.
Yes, absolutely. We will reconvene on Getting Psychic and record an episode that's just exploring that. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I think that would be kind of neat too, because then we're setting the intention for whatever is to come forward that everyone needs to hear. So that, I mean, I can't predict that. You can't predict that. That's just going to be resonant to whatever the heck's going on at that time, right?
Watch, it's going to be some crazy shit
broadcast. So yeah, that'd be fun to try and explore with you and Claire, actually.
Super fun. Okay, we'll 100% do that. And I want to make sure that everyone has access to your information, which will be linked, but feel free to please share your website and where people can find you right now.
Thanks for allowing me to mention that. So my website is vnexus22.com. So that's V as in Victor, nexus22.com. And if just real quickly, if anybody wants to understand what that's from, it's just as a kid in the tech world, you know, V is for, in physics is velocity and nexus is connection. And I always thought of myself as someone who speeds up the connection to whatever information is being, or solution that's being looked for.
Oh my God, 100%.
And then 22 is a master number because I was born on March 22nd. So in numerology, 22 is a master number. So I just added that there as a boost.
I love that. I totally was going to ask you what the 22 was.
Yeah, it's a master number for in numerology. That's just, you know, kind of like an action number. That kind of thing. And of course, I'm an Aries. So that's me, forward action. I always just try to get through things as swiftly and quickly as I can because I believe in efficiency. Like, we don't have to, I mean, I hate to say this, but, you know, we don't have to do 1,000 prayers to reach enlightenment. It can really be just as simple as your intention if it's well-intentioned and you really want to achieve that.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome that you bring that up, because when we did that session with Tamara, essentially you were given a tool and you said, what is it made of? And she said, let me ask, intention. And we were like, that's fucking awesome.
It's that so simple? You know, but that's what I mean. It's like, sometimes we sit there and, you know, we observe or learn about, you know, hey, someone had to go through 10 million processes. It really is just an ask. It really is simply just asking. Honestly, more often than not, if you just do that, you'll be surprised with the results. But you just got to be open to just even posing or proposing the question out there. So yeah, that's half the battle, people. If you can just set your intentions,
that's cool. Ask for what you want, kids.
Ask and you shall receive, as they say.
Yeah, it is really cool to actually do that and see results. It is crazy validating. So I'm so thankful to you for sharing all of this awesome information. I'm so thankful for you. I'm so thankful to you for sharing all of this information. This is a re-listen, because this is like packed with awesome stuff.
Oh my gosh. No, I mean, I'm just grateful to you too, because I mean, I don't sit there, I guess, and mull over all these different parts and pieces that converged to where we are now. But you know, I mean, even with our, you know, in my mind, the right impactful people as a group, because everybody has different, you know, roles and functions that are all synergistically working, you know, for an amazing end result and whole. So I'm like super honored to just find everyone and work with everyone like this. And again, you know, just having this channel with you, I was really flattered when you invited me to this.
Oh my gosh, my deep pleasure. I am so grateful to have found you and all of the people that you just referenced. So it's been really cool, and my wish for everyone listening is to also find
their light tribe,
people who can energetically uplift them. Yep, find your light tribe.
Exactly. All right. Well, gosh, thank you so much. I appreciate this.
Thank you so much, Vera.
Absolutely. My pleasure. I appreciate everyone and everything you do. So I just really, really grateful to you and appreciate you. Thank you.
You too.
So much.
I can't wait to have you back though. That's going to be crazy.
Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing what that brings up for sure.
Okay. Let's get weird.
Sounds good.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation as much as we did. Be sure to subscribe and follow us wherever you get your podcasts so that you never miss a new episode. If you like today's episode, please consider leaving a review to help the other psychics find their way here.